I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, another in our occasional series, Midday on Higher Education, in which we sit down with the presidents of colleges and universities throughout the state. There are nearly 60 accredited post-secondary institutions in Maryland, and among the nation's largest metropolitan areas, Greater Baltimore is the fourth most educated region in America. 17% of area residents hold advanced or professional degrees. My guest for the hour is Dr. Jose Antonio Bowen, the president of Goucher College. How does a liberal arts education prepare students for a dynamic and changing labor market? And what job is President Bowen preparing for when he leaves the Towson campus in June? Dr. Jose Antonio Bowen joins me when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Hope you had a nice weekend with all the snow, et cetera, et cetera. Thanks for being with us today. Today, it's another in our occasional series, Midday on Higher Education. From time to time, I sit down with leaders of Maryland colleges and universities to talk about the challenges that each of their institutions face and how those institutions are connected to the fabric of the communities in which they are located. The series began last month with Dr. Maria Thompson, the president of Coppin State University. She joined me in Studio A. And by the way, since appearing on our show, Dr. Thompson has announced her retirement from Coppin at the end of the academic year. Today, my guest is Jose Antonio Bowen, the president of Goucher College. He, too, has announced that he is retiring from that position at the end of June. Founded in 1885, Goucher is a private liberal arts college in Towson, just north of Baltimore. Goucher was initially an all-women's college. It became coeducational in 1986. Jose Antonio Bowen is 56 years old. He has led Goucher since 2014 after leadership and teaching positions at Southern Methodist University, Miami University, Georgetown, the University of Southampton in the UK, and Stanford University. He's also a composer, a conductor, and a jazz pianist. His Symphony No. 1 was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, and he is the author of several books, including Teaching Naked, How Moving Technology Out of Your College Classroom Will Improve Student Learning. Jose Bowen, it's good to see you, sir.
How are you? It's good to be here.
I'm great, too. We are streaming our conversation on Facebook, so you can join us there. You could also drop us an email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @midday_wypr, and we'll take your calls and comments a little bit later in the broadcast. So I want to start by asking you about an initiative that you started a few years ago. And as far as I know, it's the only initiative like it in the country, and that has to do with people who apply to Goucher College, students, can do this as a video application. So tell me what the parameters of that are. You started it in 2015-16, that academic year, so 3 or 4 years ago. How does that work?
Right. So, you know, college should be about finding potential. And so we know that most of the things that people do to get into college, write essays, take tests, take AP courses in high school, vary depending on socioeconomic class, on race, on where you live, your parents, education, all those sorts of things. So the SAT, for example, has about a 200-250 point bump based upon your parents' education. There's a gap between white and black students. So if that's all you look at, you continue to perpetuate the people who went to college, their kids get to go to college. So we were looking for more potential. So Goucher's been SAT optional for a long time. And so the question was, is there something else we can do that would encourage more students to apply? So the video application was an idea that students would be able to send us a 2-minute video. We actually started with 3-minute videos, and then people told us that was too long. But the idea is that, you know, more students have a phone than have a laptop. There's still a digital divide in this country. So students could send us a video about why they wanted to come to Goucher. So we called it the Goucher Video App. And we made the transcript optional and recommendation letters optional, but we asked for 2 authentic pieces of work. So we asked students to send us 2 pieces of work from high school, but we said, you know, just take a picture of your high school essay with your teacher's comments on it, because we wanted authenticity. As we all know, you can buy an essay, you can get essay help, or if you have parents who will read your essay 100 times and fix all the comma mistakes and that sort of thing. So we wanted authenticity. We wanted to give students a chance to tell us who they were and why they wanted to come to Goucher. And so this year we'll be graduating our first students who entered under the video app. And it turns out they did just as well as the students who sent us test scores and transcript, right? And I said at the time it was an experiment. It might not work. It might fail. In the very first semester, they actually had better grades than our students who sent us test scores and transcripts. But one of our very best students this year, graduate, was a video app.
And how many students opted for that over the last few years, you know, generally speaking?
So it's a pretty small percentage. So out of 450, you know, 450 students incoming class, we might have 25 students come in through the video app. So it's a pretty small number. My favorite sort of one, as one kid, I was in Tennessee someplace, and a kid told me that he'd only applied to two places, to Bard and to Goucher, because he wanted to be more than just a number. So I asked him then to tell the assembled group about his video application. He says, I didn't. I like the video app, but I have perfect SAT scores. I knew enough to send you my SAT scores. So people have the option, and some people take it, and some, but at least it's a way of thinking about the process.
So you don't even see a transcript from high school. You don't even know whether they got an A in English or a C in chemistry or an F in history.
Correct. For those students who send us the video and two pieces of high school work, and faculty look at them as well, we make a decision based upon those materials. Now, sometimes they say, we'd like to see more. We'd also like to see the transcript. But there are also students who say enough in their video to convince us that they have enough desire and their circumstances warrant them to be admitted.
So is it apples and oranges then if you're evaluating the prospects for a student who sent a video application with some work samples but no transcript, no test scores, and then you're comparing that person to a kid who has sent in the SAT scores, which may not be stellar or may be stellar? I mean, how do you reconcile those two very different approaches to getting in?
Yeah, you're right. They are kind of apples and oranges. And so, you know, students have to make a choice at sometimes. And again, if they have, you know, lousy SATs or transcripts or something, then a student might elect to do that. That was an initial fear, too. But it turns out that mostly what happens is that students, again, especially this generation, they want to tell their story. That matters more to them that they get to say, here's who I am, here's where I came from. You know, one of the students who, his video still sticks with me because it starts off with a close-in shot of a freeway. Cars are just going by like 2 inches from his face. And then he turns the camera and his phone around and he says, this is where I grew up. And there's this house right on the freeway. He says, I don't ever want to come back here. I want to go to Goucher College. it's like, okay, that's, you know.
So what does that tell you about that kid? What is appealing to you about that statement?
So it tells me about, right, narrative structure and about how his brain works, right, that he knew enough. Again, I might not have known that in an essay, but he knew enough to make that visual shot worth. But he also told a compelling story. Remember that we give students a rubric. So on our website, it tells you what we're going to look at. So we want to know, do you have something compelling to say, right? Do you have a story to tell? Two, we want to know, do you tell the story well, right? Do you use the film, the medium of the film, well to tell the story? So that's a student who has a compelling story, who told it well, and has an interest in Goucher, and then went on to articulate why Goucher and not some other college. So that's a student who's been thoughtful about the process. Those things all generally indicate somebody who's going to do well in college. And it turns out, he did.
You, if I recall correctly, are first generation in your family to go to college.
Indeed.
You went to Stanford University for a long time, for about 10 years. You got a BS in chemistry, then you got a master's in humanities, all from Stanford. Then you went on to get another master's in music composition and ultimately a PhD in both musicology and humanities. You are dangerously overeducated yourself. That's quite impressive.
Too many degrees.
But has the video application, in fact, help you diversify your student body? I mean, are there students, particularly students of color, whose applications have advanced because they were able to distinguish themselves in this video format as opposed to writing?
So I think that's That's partly the case, and we have certainly diversified the student body significantly in the last 5 years. This year's entering class is 42% students of color. That's up from about 26%. We're 29% Pell students. That's up significantly. We're up first-generation students. International students were up, and then they're probably down a little bit now. But we've increased every type of diversity on our campus, even religious diversity. We're building an interfaith center to deal with that. So the video app may have contributed to that a little bit. I think the ideals behind it contributed more. I mean, we've put more emphasis on being an institution of potential and trying to find more students who would enjoy and benefit from Goucher. But certainly my own experience, because I went, like a lot of first-generation students, you know, I was an accident. I mean, it was a total accident. And, I went to one of those big public high schools in California with the, 650 kids in the graduating class and one high school counselor who was just not interested in doing his job. And so he had gone to the city college, community college. And so he actually said to me, well, it was good enough for me. It's good enough for you. And by the way, it's open admission, so you might even get in. I think those were actually his words. And so I went home and my mother, who, single mom, didn't speak really much English, but she knew what the word valedictorian meant. So she went back to the school, and of course I know this secondhand because I wasn't there, but the next day coming to school and it's like, you're not going to believe what your mother did. And I say, what? So your mother, charges into Mr. What's-His-Name's office and she's yelling into his navel in Spanish because he's about 6 feet tall and she's about 4 feet tall. But the only thing we could hear were like 4.0 in Spanish and valedictorian. And that's like, okay, that's what she did. So they actually called the security on her and she's standing there with this security guard at the door knowing the gig is up. And so she grabs some papers off his desk and brings them home and says, get a pen, fill them out. So I did. It was really pretty random because I didn't know what she was going to grab. I didn't know she was going to do this. And so on April 1st, the next year, I got a big envelope with an S on it. And that changed my life. I really hadn't heard of it. Maybe Jim Plunkett. It reminds
quarterback for the football team. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it reminds me that sports is really how most people have heard of colleges, and sports comes in for a lot of abuse. But Alabama and Clemson have more applications because they're on TV. And now maybe that's not the way it should work. But it is certainly the case that when your team makes the NCAA tournament or your school, that's how people like me have heard of you. I'd never heard of any of these other schools.
Did you have any notion that Stanford University was one of the most elite universities in the country?
No idea. Absolutely no idea. And I was musicalist, so I was thinking about, I had a little bit of thought. Some people had mentioned, music schools to me and that sort of thing. But I quickly found out that Stanford was not a great music place. I mean, it's pretty good, but it wasn't, it wasn't Juilliard. And so I thought, huh. But I went anyway, got dropped off sight unseen and never seen the place before, met my roommates, and that changed my life. So college has this incredible potential. And it turns out that, it does kind of matter where you go, that going to a place that has a high graduation rate, going to a place that has more services, more opportunities, does change things. Of course, it most matters how you go to college. I'm always telling students that, it's do you take advantage of the opportunities? So if you're not the kind of person to go bang on Linus Pauling's door, every day for a whole semester, then Stanford's not going to do you as much good. And so it does, getting engaged with wherever you go, you can get a great education anywhere. But certainly for me, there were some social benefits and some social hardships. I didn't know what a yacht was. I didn't know summer was a verb. I met all sorts of people. It's like, you what? Your family, what? You're related to who is your dad? That was definitely, and I caution students, because it's to this day, Harvard and Yale and Princeton and Stanford are still some of the cheapest institutions to go to because they means test tuition. So for a first generation student who gets in, it's often the cheapest. It's often cheaper than community college to go to Harvard or Yale. But there are you're going to encounter things you did not expect.
we will encounter some more things that we don't expect with Jose Antonio Bowen when we come back from a quick break. More with President Bowen about Goucher College, the place he has been leading since for the last 5 years. He will retire from that position in June. If you'd like to join us when we come back, our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. You can also follow us on the WYPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, a look at the small business climate here in Baltimore. How easy is it to start and maintain a business in our city? The owners of three local businesses join me with their perspectives. Tim Hicks and Mariah Acap of the Baltimore Body Shop, Lane Harlan and Matthew Pierce of Clavel and other restaurants, and Pierre and Jamila Benu of Oyen Handmade talk about what it's like to do business in Baltimore. That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us today, it's Midday on Higher Education. My guest is Goucher College President Dr. Jose Antonio Bowen. Dr. Bowen has been president of Goucher College up in Towson since 2014. He recently announced that he will step down from that post in June. He's the author of several books, as well as a composer and jazz pianist. Jose Bowen also comments on education as part of the public commentary program here on WYPR, in which five community leaders contribute essays on matters of public interest. Dr. Bowen's next essay will air tomorrow morning after the news at 10 o'clock. You are welcome to be part of our conversation today. The number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, that is always appreciated. It's @TomHallWYPR. And we are streaming our conversation on the WYPR Facebook page. Jose Bowen, when we talk about colleges today, I hear a lot of people say that one of the problems they encounter is the preparedness of students for college. So whether they apply to get into Goucher through the video application or a written application, are you finding that the remedial work in sort of basics of writing, the basics of computation are is a challenge for you at a place like Goucher? Or does Goucher have the luxury of taking students who really are pretty up to snuff and able to jump right into a college curriculum?
So I actually don't think anybody has that luxury, because if Harvard did that, and they do, they end up having a disproportionate number of wealthy white students, because what's really happened is that the gap between public and private has widened. So I experienced this when I went to college, and I sat next to somebody who went to private school, and so she knew a whole lot more than I did to start. So that gap has only widened. It's especially difficult in math. So as SAT math scores, et cetera, start to drop, as the math teachers in our high school struggle, class size, et cetera, we see students coming in who don't know that they can do math. They think they can't because of their high school experience. So what all colleges do is they try to segregate students into math, and, well, you're into the calculus, you're into the pre-calculus, et cetera. But what happens is that lots of students are so far behind, they don't realize they actually could go to medical school. They actually could do a STEM degree. But they're told, well, no, I'm sorry, you have to major in the humanities because you don't have enough math in high school. That's simply not fair. That because of the high school you went to, a whole group of careers are cut off from you, and you had no say in that. So what we've done instead is to try to increase the math for all students, to increase what we call data analytics, to create a new calculus trajectory, but also not to require calculus for all students, but to require statistics, and thinking very differently about where we get students, because we wanted to avoid the trap of, well, we hear the remedial courses, because the minute I tell you, well, here's the remedial course, you're less ambitious about where you could go because of your high school experience. So we've tried to avoid that. But I think all colleges have some of that problem, that the gap between public and private education in this country continues to widen, and the opportunities that you have continue to be even more based upon where you live and what your parents did.
Speaking of math, that's one of the majors that you made a pretty controversial decision to eliminate at Goucher College. It's along with things like physics and music and Russian studies and a host of others. You made a decision to really go through the majors you were offering and decide that you're no longer going to offer some of them. That was, as I mentioned, controversial. It happened a few months ago. What's been the reaction? And I assume that the animating spirit behind that is financial, that you just simply can't be all things to all people, and it's too expensive to offer those majors. Is that right?
Sure. So a couple things. So the first is that any student who entered Goucher in the fall can do any of the majors we offered at the time he or she entered. So, it's not retroactive. It'll take us, several years to make all of this complete. It was a collaborative process. The faculty actually, did the work of having to look at majors and who majors and what. But you're right. There was initial financial incentive. And part of that comes because colleges like to add. We don't like to subtract. And so over years, you add new things. You add computer science. You add other programs. And so then students then vote with their feet and they start moving into certain things. But the most important thing is that, we didn't eliminate math, right? So let's do some math, right? So to have a math major, let's say you have, four faculty teaching five classes a year. You got 20 classes you can offer a year. So if your math major takes 12 of those classes, right? So you have upper level courses in combinatorics or stochastic equations, which only your math majors will take. So as math shrinks as a major, now you've only got one or two or three or four students in each of those courses, right? Somebody else on the campus has to make up the slack. Plus, you've only got eight classes a year for the non-major. So if you've got everybody, you've got 1,500 students wanting to take those courses start to get bigger, or you have to have adjuncts, or something else has to happen. So we made a conscious decision with math because we have a spectacularly good math department. They've thought of new ways of teaching calculus. They're integrating the curriculum with other departments. In fact, what they're proposing now that's been accepted by the faculty is a new interdisciplinary major in data analytics. So that they'll combine what we really think is the new skill of the future, which is the ability to do spreadsheets, to having statistical information, right? Because there are no jobs in the future that are not going to include data analytics or include, big sets of data. So not everybody needs calculus, but everybody needs to understand how data works. And so we wanted every single student at Goucher to have that ability. And so you can't have every single student do that and offer all of these teeny tiny courses for the major. So as a liberal arts college, right, we're constantly thinking about what are the specialty things we need to do and what does everybody need to do and how do those things balance? And my argument is that in the 21st century, the specialized majors matter less, that the major you pick in college was never supposed to be that important. That's the whole point of the liberal arts, right? You're not going to be a philosopher or an anthropologist necessarily because you majored in that. That's just the one thing you got depth in. What really matters is 4 years of improving your writing skills. So we increased our writing in the new curriculum to 3 semesters of writing over time. And we doubled the math requirement. We still require study abroad for all students. And then we redid our general education curriculum so that instead of having students take a whole series of individual intro courses in one department or another department, they're taking 4 seminars in complex problem solving that are interdisciplinary, they're working in groups, that they're tackling problems that really matter. So instead of taking introduction to biology, where half of the class want to be biology majors, and you're just sitting there going, I got to tick this requirement, instead we offer courses, like there's a course on disease and discrimination that has biology in it. It's about disease, but it also has public policy. It has other economics. It has sociology. Other kinds of factors are in it so that you actually get past the first semester of intro, the valence electrons, that you actually get to the disease part and say, actually, I like biology. I might want to take more biology. So it's a different kind of curriculum, but we did shift the balance from having lots of individual specialized majors to focusing more on what we can do for every student.
What do you respond to the folks who say, well, look, the American economy is going to be animated by STEM experts, by people who know science and technology and mathematics, and this, it's the STEM careers, the STEM curriculums. You hear them being introduced in a more forceful way in high schools around the country. We talk about the STEM deficit that the United States has with countries like Germany or Japan and other places in Europe and Asia. They'll say, in order to, you know, if you're going to invest the $280,000, $300,000 it takes to go to Goucher College, what do you get out of that that's going to put you in a good position in the workforce?
Well, again, so first of all, is all students are going to get data analytics. They're going to get twice as much math as they're going to get any place else. We still offer all of the other math courses. We have a terrific, you know, well-known pre-med program. We still have all of the sciences. In fact, building a new science building is the core of our campaign. It's the number one priority on our list. So science is a part of the liberal arts, and it is important that we have more people doing STEM. But the pure math that we were offering was leading mostly to the PhD and was not appealing to lots of students. That may change, right? At the moment, you know, we have lots of people teaching Spanish and fewer people teaching other languages. That's different than it was 50 years ago. And so as more people want, you know, I mean, languages change, requirements change, students change. So this has to be dynamic. So what we offer to all students is one question. The set of individualized majors that we offer is a different question.
We have an email from a guy named Jonathan who says that his spouse is a visiting professor working on a year-to-year contract at Goucher. So is it true then that you're going to need to fire a bunch of faculty in order to realign the kinds of curriculum that you're talking about?
So the answer is absolutely not, and I'm very proud of the fact that we've not let any tenured faculty go. We've not had to do any of that. Lots of other places, again, just pick up a newspaper or look at Inside Higher Ed, and you'll see lots of schools doing the same kind of realignment, but with having to fire people. So for us, again, it's like I mentioned, the math. You know, if you look at the math department, the math department's terrific, but instead of teaching quite as many specialized courses, they'll be teaching different courses. So part of this decision was to value full-time tenure track faculty, that we actually want more of our workforce to be that kind of faculty that are totally invested in the campus, that visit the campus, that maybe even live on campus. And so most colleges are cutting costs by going to more and more adjuncts and more part-time people, and Goucher's going against that trend. If we're going to offer value, it turns out we really need to have people who are invested and who are on the campus all the time. So their specialty matters less, but they're being full-time and they're being at the college and they're being invested in students really matters.
But you do save money then by having fewer adjunct professors.
Over time, there will be fewer people on part-time contracts. So that's a good thing. It's a good thing for students. It's a good thing for the college budget. You don't save as much money. Surely, again, going to the other model that lots of colleges are doing saves more money. But again, if you're trying to invest in quality, then again, we think this is a different kind of solution that other colleges have not tried, which is to go with people who are more generalists, who can teach more subjects, but who are full-time faculty.
My guest is Jose Antonio Bowen. He is the president of Goucher College. This is part of our series of Goucher on Higher Education. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Our number here, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Earlier in the program, Dr. Bowen talked about an application he received, or the college received, that was done as part of the video application process at Goucher College. And Sarah from Baltimore is on the line. And Sarah, I guess you are related to the student that Dr. Bowen talked about in the first part of the show.
Yeah, one of the students. Hi, how are you?
Good.
One of the students that you talked about who did the video of the house.
Yes.
Is my nephew, and it wasn't his only option as a college, but that video, that way of doing the application, I think opened his eyes to a different way of doing things. And it's been fascinating to hear the response from you, Dr. Bowen, and from others who have seen the video. It was written up in the Washington Post article, and there were a lot of people really opposed to having college applications this way, that it was going to degrade the quality of going to college. It was very great to hear what you said about the kids who applied that way. He's on track to graduate. He's doing pretty well. And I think he's getting an experience at a place like Goucher he might not have gotten at his other choices. So I just wanted to comment on that. And President Bowen, you're going to be missed at Goucher.
Thank you very much. And I didn't mention his name. I wanted to keep him anonymous, but indeed, it was in the Washington Post, so it's probably still there for people to find that video on the Washington Post website. But it was an arresting opening, and yeah, he's had a great time at Goucher.
Well, thank you for that call, Sarah. I appreciate it. Jose Bowen, you're in the middle of a book, a new book, one of many you've written, about the three R's. It used to be reading, writing, and arithmetic, but you have a different formulation for what the three R's are. What are they?
I do. And this is something we've really developed at Goucher, so I'm very happy that to share this with a wider audience. But we think the new three R's are relationships, resilience, and reflection. And the reason for that is because learning is about change. It always has been about change, right? You actually have to, you know, biologically and physically change your brain to learn new information. And everybody is different. So if I teach you something new, you file it someplace differently than the next person, right? The way that you think, because it relates to the knowledge that you already have. So that process of learning how to learn new things, how to change your mind, has become more important in our world because we've gone from a world that where knowledge was relatively scarce but relatively reliable, so right, the encyclopedia had no cat videos in it, to a world now where we have abundant knowledge, but most of it's unreliable, and so the internet...
A major deficit for encyclopedias, by the way.
Correct.
A world without cat videos would just not be worth living in, I think.
But if you found the encyclopedia, you had some, this is probably reliable or relatively reliable information, and so if you went to the library and looked at it, or you had a textbook, so now the world, you know, students just Google everything on their phone, so the ability to understand what's important, what's relevant, what's true, has been just magnified in its importance. And we also know, again, one of the reasons that your specific major matters less is because there's going to be lots of new information you're going to need to learn in your career. And whatever you do, right, new things are going to happen, new things are going to be developed all the time. So we want students to be really proficient at understanding their own learning process and how learning changes you. So we start with relationships. Turns out the single most important thing in college is not the courses you take, but the relationships you form. Finding a professor who believes in you and says, I think you're going to be a great poet or a great physicist, has lifetime benefits in all sorts of areas. We know that learning is also about resilience, about failure. And finally, it's really about reflection, the ability to say, well, I've learned something new. So I have to rethink the things that I thought I knew. And so we build reflection exercises into all sorts of things. The students roll their eyes when I talk about it by senior year, right? But because it's become, yeah, you know, there's going to be a reflection exercise, whether it's study abroad or it's community engagement, or just I got my midterm or my paper back. And before I get to see the grade, I've got to read the feedback. I've got to read the comments and think, how could I have made this paper better myself when I do it the next time? And that's a step that most teachers and most colleges skip, frankly. It's like, here's the feedback and the grade, but the grade has an other problem, which is that it sets off your fight or flight, and you know, oh my gosh, now I'm labeled, I'm a B minus, and so then you don't actually get the benefit of the feedback. So we want to teach students to reflect on their experiences and what they're learning, and to be really good at changing their minds.
And when we come back from a break, we're going to ask you to reflect on the 5 years you've spent at Goucher College and the reasons that you've decided to leave that position at the end of the school year. Midday on Higher Education. It continues with Goucher College President Dr. Jose Antonio Bowen. When we do come back from a break, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR, and we are streaming our conversation here in Studio A on the WYPR Facebook page. So before we take a break, on Mondays here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of the people who've lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. We get their names from Ellen Worthing, who has compiled a list of Baltimore homicide victims for the last 18 years. We also consult the Baltimore Sun's list of homicides and homicide victim identifications that are posted on the Baltimore Police Department's Facebook page. So far this year, 11 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. One previously unidentified victim from the week before last has now been named by police. Corey Mosley was 17 years old. Last week, police reported 5 homicide victims in our city. So far, they have identified only 2 of those victims. Their names are Renika Howard.
She was 25 years old. And Tavon Wilson, he was 20 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, it's Midday on Higher Education. This is the second in an occasional series in which we'll sit down with leaders of colleges and universities throughout Maryland. My guest today is the president of Goucher College, Dr. Jose Antonio Bowen. If you'd like to join our conversation with Dr. Bowen, our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR, and we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. So when it comes to reflecting, let me ask you to reflect on what you hoped to do when you applied to be the president of Goucher College 5 years ago. Why did you want to be a college president to begin with? Why did you want to, you were running music departments and you had been the dean of places, you'd been the head honcho in departments and in larger universities, but all of a sudden, evidently, you wanted to be a college president. What was it about being a college president that appealed to you at the time, and how has your actual experience doing the job reckoned with that notion of what it might be?
Thanks, Tom. Always the easy question. So, you know, I love the arts. I love teaching. But I also really think the liberal arts matter for America and for our society. And so Goucher College is a place that was really doing that well. And I wanted to make sure that Goucher College continued to do that. And it's also, I knew it was a time of change and I wanted to see, you know, what we could do. I did not realize there would be quite as much change. I mean, people, you know, I go to these conferences and they always announce, you know, with smugness that it's been the worst 4 years to be a college president in history. The worst 5 years. It's like, well, thanks a lot. So, I mean, there's been a lot of change that some of which colleges can't control, right? The economy, politics, demographics are the big one that, right, the Northeast and the Midwest, you know, the birth dearth is been coming at us. We're being depopulated. Students want to go south for the warmth for college. So lots of factors that and the liberal reader can't control, including, you know, mostly that the liberal arts college and the words liberal arts have fallen out of favor. So fewer and fewer people will even consider coming to visit a liberal arts college for their children because either they want that STEM, they want vocational, or they don't want to go to college at all. So you know, there's no question that happened more dramatically than I thought it would over the time. But, you know, I'm very proud of the people I work with and the things that we've done. Despite all of that, we managed to have our first 0% tuition increase in history. We built new residence halls, a new dining hall. I mentioned the new science program. We've created a new career program, which, again, partly, you know, to respond to parents' anxiety about careers. So we took the Career Center and made it non-optional, right? That now it's built into the curriculum into 4 years, so students will have to visit the Career Center and not just wait until the week before graduation and panic. We had record fundraising, record years. We had record numbers of new donors. We've had record yield in recruitment. I mentioned diversity, so we created the Center for Race, Equity, and Identity to help serve a more diverse student population.
But if things are going so great, why quit?
You know, my first love is the classroom, and I've been doing this for 20 years now, and you know, doing higher ed administration one way, shape, or form at the point of the spear. And when I started, I used to say to people, well, it's still a very creative job, right? I do the minimum of spreadsheets and complaint department, and I do a lot of thinking, well, how do we make this better? How do we spend this money to do something that no one else has ever done? And that's become increasingly hard over the last 20 years. I mean, so the amount of time you spend in financial concerns and other sorts of things has just continues to increase. And frankly, after that, I miss teaching. You know, I do a little bit of teaching, and I get to be in the classroom. And every time I do it, or I do a concert, I think, oh, this makes me happy. And so part of it's, you know, my age and what I want to do with the remaining productive years of my life that I have. And so I'm looking forward to getting back on the road for music. I spend a lot of time on the road for Goucher, but don't do very many concerts. So part of that's just a bit of, you know, reflecting, right? Reflecting is our third R on what things most matter for what comes next.
But no teaching job lined up. You're not going from this job to another job. You're
the first year's
freelance posture here.
Well, the first year is definitely a sabbatical. The first year, I want to finish this new book for Johns Hopkins Press on the three R's and on again on largely on what we've done at Goucher and how we're rethinking how education can look in an age where knowledge is now abundant on your phone, but mostly unreliable. So what do those things mean? I've become really fascinated by nudges, this theory in economics that just won the Nobel Prize, on how you can nudge people to do better behaviors, right? We've learned recently that education is a little like fitness, right? That the person who does the work gets the benefit. So that watching somebody else do push-ups is just not that useful. Even if they're even if they're intellectual push-ups, right? Watching is not the same thing as doing. And so it turns out that if I can get you to do more problem sets, if I make them more interesting, you'll do them more, you'll get the benefit, right? You'll hit more tennis balls, you'll do whatever. So right, the problem set example is real. Think about, so train A leaves the station going 20 miles an hour. Train B leaves the station going 30 miles an hour, but it leaves 10 minutes later, right? How much do you care? Not at all. So those are you're assigning those problem sets. My problem sets are, well, so the wide receiver can run 20 miles per hour and the cornerback can run this fast, and how many yards does he have to stand back to be able to not let the right? My football team is going to be a whole lot more interested in that, right? So the types of examples that you use, the way that you frame problems, those are nudges. And so I actually suggest to faculty that you want maybe the same numbers, but the examples to change in different kinds of problem sets, because they'll motivate and interest different students. So that's a nudge that gets students to do more of the work. So we've used this principle in our residence halls and our dining halls. And so the book that I'm working on is related to all of the new work going on research about education, what I call SWEET, sleep, water, exercise, eating, and time are actually the five most important things that a student can do to advance his or her learning. And so students on campus greet me with when I say, "How's it going?" They go, "Sweet." And we have a SWEET campaign. And so these are things that other colleges and universities could benefit from as well. And so the first thing to do is to write a new book about this.
You got a fan on Facebook, Estelle, who says the three R's, relationship, resiliency, and reflection, have been my mantra since I first heard you define them. And she wishes you all the best. Jay emails regarding STEM education. He says, "I heard Jill Lepore recently on NPR." She's a wonderful historian.
She is amazing, and, yes.
Contributor to New Yorker magazine. And she said that commenting on the state of politics and civil discourse, she says, we can't STEM our way out of this. So, again, making the argument that a liberal arts focus can, in fact, I guess on some level, you're asserting that it can be a better preparation for the workforce than a chemistry degree or a biology degree or a computer science degree.
Well, remember, I have a degree in chemistry, but it's not either or. I mean, people have got to get out of this STEM or liberal arts. There's no or there, right? If all you know how to do is the technical, you're just a plumber, right? I shouldn't say that to plumbers. I'm sorry. It's right. You're just being technical. It's just I'm going to screw this and the screw is going to happen. Right? You're not actually dealing with what's the problem I want to solve? And plumbers have to solve problems too, right? What tool do I need for this problem? What else might I have to look at? And so we need problem solvers. We also need people who have STEM content, surely. But the country can't focus without people. It can't thrive if you don't have people who can think for themselves, who can tell fact from fiction, who can evaluate new information and say, you know what? We have to change this policy because in 1970, when we did this, we had different information. Now we know more about pollution or about this problem or about water. We have to now change our policy. So change is an inevitable part of life and a part of learning. So we need people who are good at change. And we also need people who are content specialists in everything. But it's not an either or.
Why are college educations at places like Goucher College so incredibly expensive? I mean, it's around $300,000 for a parent from New Jersey or Connecticut or Maryland to send their child to a place like Goucher. Yet, almost no one who is enrolled at Goucher or any of the other colleges in the area is paying list price. I mean, so 90%, as I understand it, of the students at Goucher are subsidized in some way. Why start so high and then subsidize everybody? Wouldn't it be better to just have a list price that's really reflective of what people are going to end up paying?
So you're absolutely right. Colleges have priced themselves and, you know, increased tuition because they could. And that's true, you know, universally in our country. College prices have gone up above inflation for 50 or 60 years. And only recently has that trend slowed. But I noticed that lots of colleges are still raising their tuition. So at Goucher, we stopped raising tuition. We had a 0% 1 year, and now we've had below inflation increases a couple of years in a row. So we're seeing our relative price drop. So it's significantly less than that. And you're right. We give financial aid to almost everyone, and it's substantial. So for most students, they're paying, I mean, considerably less than they actually can often come to Goucher for less than they could go to a state institution. But you're right. So the problem is that that's the sticker price, right? It's the sticker price versus the discounted price. It's the Nordstrom's versus the Nordstrom's Rack problem. And so the problem is the psychology, right? So again, colleges raise prices because they could, and then they realize that everybody likes a discount. People like to know that your kid is getting a scholarship. And so, right, the economists tell us people are more likely to buy a $20 shirt that started off at $50 that's been discounted by $30 than to buy a $20 shirt. So colleges are now in the place where, because right, we didn't used to think like this.
So it's like a branding thing?
We're gonna
inflate what it really costs and then, you know, actually charge you a whole lot less just so that you think you're getting a deal?
Well, again, that's not how it started. I mean, again, college, first of all, you know, liberal arts colleges, private colleges are really expensive to run. Right, tuition does not cover the full cost. It's about 70% at a place like Goucher. So we have to raise money and have other sources of income to be able to subsidize even that full pay student, because tuition is not enough to cover these really, really small classes and having faculty who teach fewer amounts of students and smaller teaching loads. So it is an expensive proposition. But it's also true that historically, all colleges, but especially private colleges, right, because state colleges were often limited in how much they could raise tuition. But private colleges raised tuition because they could, right? There were plenty of students, and we aren't charging enough. We've got too many people who want to come. And so this is for the last 60 years. So colleges kind of got in the habit, right? Just it's kind of a financial model habit of raising tuition. And so it wasn't as if anybody said, oh, we're going to raise tuition so we can have discount. It just kind of happened. And now people are looking back and go, oh, my goodness, we've actually raised tuition so high. So there is a movement to start reduce. People are saying, well, I need to reduce tuition. And so we've seen experiments. And so lots of us look at, you know, 40 colleges that have reset their tuition. And for some of them, it worked, right? That means somebody is people are more likely to be paying full price and not getting that discount. So we're watching that model unfold. But colleges are very hesitant to make big changes because we only do this. We only have a one time a year sales cycle. So any mistake you make happens once a year, and then it lasts for 4 years. So we're a little nervous about that.
And people talk about the load of student debt, you know, the student loans as the next big crisis affecting the economy. We're out of time, so we don't have the option to really talk about that. But I mean, just very quickly, if you got to raise all this money, how do you raise that from students who've just graduated in the last 5-10 years who are still busy paying off their loans?
So Goucher has very low student debt. We have below average student debt because we worked very hard to make sure that didn't happen. So the problem is that, yeah, there's a crisis in student debt. People are taking on too much student debt. However, some debt is okay. It is actually okay to take on a little bit of debt to get a better education and to improve your chances.
What's a little bit of debt?
A little bit of debt would be less than it would be to buy a car, right? To invest, you know,
$20,000,
$25,000. The number of students who invested $100,000, that was terrible. That should never have happened, and it doesn't happen at Goucher.
Dr. Jose Antonio Bowen is the outgoing president of Goucher College. He'll leave the Towson campus on the 30th of June. It's good to see you, sir. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Dr. Bowen is one of several community leaders who contribute essays every few weeks here on WYPR as part of our public commentary program. His latest essay will air tomorrow morning just before the start of Here and Now. Our Midday on Higher Education series continues in mid-March when I'll speak with Dr. Jay Pearman of the University of Maryland, Baltimore. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, a look at the small business climate in Baltimore. Three couples who run businesses here, Tim Hicks and Mariah Acap. They run the Baltimore Body Shop and a popular YouTube channel. Lane Harlan and Matthew Pierce own a couple of restaurants, and Jamila and Pierre Benu own a successful cosmetics company called Oyen Handmade. They'll talk about what it's like to run a business here in Baltimore. We want to thank the Diz for providing lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. You can find them on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. I'm Tom Hall. Stay tuned. Lots more coming up at the top of the hour. News at NPR and then Here and Now. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.